Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com. Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Comedy, the return of Jesse Egan.
We're
ladies
live.
And gentlemen. Yes, live. I wasn't sure I was going to make it.
That'd be
the first time I would have been
late. I know. I wouldn't have known what to do.
Yeah.
I would just start pushing buttons and looking up porn on this computer. And
yeah.
Would have been a bad show.
You still looked at porn on the computer.
I'd do that anyway.
You didn't hit any buttons, at least.
But no, it's good to be here, buddy.
Yeah.
It's nice to see you.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
You too? You had some health scare, and then you went out of town. And
I've been a little shitty.
Yeah.
I have had this thing, diverticulitis, that's like an inflammation in your intestine.
How do you get that?
It's just irritable. I just got my bowels just irritable.
I gotcha.
Pissed off and irritable. I don't know really how you get it. I think, you know, the doctors say it's from years of a bad Western diet without enough fiber.
Okay.
But it could also be I was on this liquid diet for like 6 months and your bowel can weaken or whatever.
Yeah.
This is pretty gross. It's pretty gross stuff. But I was in the hospital for about a week on IV meds and painkillers and antibiotics and stuff.
Yeah.
And I am not a fan of antibiotics. I've realized, I read about it, like the antibiotics can kill all your gut bacteria. And if you Google gut bacteria flora, which is a weird thing to Google, but
that's a technical term.
I think it's called gut flora. I don't know. Probably there's more technical.
Yeah.
But apparently that stuff is very important. And when you kill all the bacteria in your system, it can throw off a lot of things, including your mood and other things. So it's, I think I'm now trying to take probiotics to generate that stuff back up.
Right.
My boss had a theory that the appendix, which no one knows what it's for, is actually probably a little sac to preserve bacteria in case of an emergency, to reintegrate, bacteria, which I think is an interesting theory.
Yeah.
But anyway, how's everything going with comedy?
Comedy's going. I actually, on my health side,
yes,
I will have a doctor's appointment this Friday.
Oh, good.
So the first time I've seen a doctor in 8 years.
8 years, and this is a real doctor, not a quack or something.
No, it's a real doctor. I set it up today.
Obama helped you out. You got some care.
Yeah, that's I got some Obamacare,
Thank you, Obama.
I've been waiting for my card. Cause I thought I needed the card, but I called today seeing what's going on and they said, well, you don't need the card. We can set you up an appointment.
Sweet. So, that's great.
Friday morning.
Don't stress. It's the best thing you can do.
Yeah. No, no.
Talk to them,
I'm getting like a overall physical and blood work. So
awesome.
We'll see how
I'm
I am.
Stoked. Please let me know.
Yeah, I will. I'll let you know.
Yeah. How are you doing, Villarba? Are you all right?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
We're probably not supposed to bring him in yet, but any health scares for you?
Not that I'm aware of.
You're wearing a hat that says sick since 96.
Yeah. It's actually, Flow Snowboarding, the company I do marketing for.
So that's just sick.
That's
bro sick. You're not actually infirmed.
No, not infirm.
I get it.
That's good.
That's a good thing.
Comedy.
Comedy. Yeah.
Comedy. Yeah.
Catching up on comedy. And it's a new year.
Yeah. I did, trying to do more this year.
That's
like
good.
The last few months, I kind of was only doing like 3 or 4 shows a month. But, trying to get more into it. Last week, we did Winston's and it was really good.
I heard that was probably
one of my better sets I've had in a long time. Like, I did about 10 minutes and every joke got an applause break.
That's awesome.
Pretty sick.
I heard great things about that show.
Yeah, it was really good. And then this week we did Till 2 together.
Yeah.
Kind of weird tandem style.
You were on stage and I hid in the shadows.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. There was like 4 people there.
Yeah.
It was Death City.
Yeah. I wouldn't have done it alone.
Nothing against Till 2. I love it. Especially when Gordon's there and stuff. He was sick or whatever. So I think, it's not the same vibe, but, who was running it? Jimmy
Woolpair.
Who I love. Jimmy Woolpair is a great dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I just couldn't do it. But it was fun doing a back and forth.
Yeah,
on the mic,
haven't done that in a while. And then Thursday with Randy, I did a show at the Riviera Supper Club or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. No,
Dustin
Jackson put that show together. And no, it was really, really, I mean, I walked in, never been there before. I always drove by it.
Yeah.
Just kind of saw the neon lights and the place was packed.
It sounds classy. Where's the Riviera Supper Club?
It's in La Mesa.
Okay.
It's one of those places where you can cook your own steak or whatever.
It sounded like that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you guys do that too? Did you cook your own steaks?
No, I had them make me a meatball sub though.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I had the Belching Beaver, about 3 of them, just the beers.
Uh-huh.
Actually pretty good. No, I didn't get a chance to get a steak. I got there just before the show started.
Okay.
Yeah, so they hooked it up.
That's cool. Who runs that?
Dustin Jackson.
Dustin Jackson.
It was a first-time thing, but it looks like it's going to be monthly now.
Okay.
So,
awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. And
Mesa can use
I had to go
shows
up after Matt Burke, which I always hate.
You do? You don't like following?
He's the only.
Sometimes you got to jizz.
Yeah.
No, seriously. He's very intimidating to follow because at that point, I mean, he's had the crowd on just consistent giggles. You're like, okay, I got to follow that. That's mm-hmm. pretty interesting. He always hits the mic very impressively. Always impressive.
I think what it is that it's so unpredictable and you can tell it's not material. It's like riffing and that's hard to follow, just like crowd work's hard to follow.
Right. But I think he didn't crush. So he did consistently well. Yeah, and I think the show builded. I think when Ryan Hicks went after me, and he did well, and then Brian Simpson did really well in the end. So
sounds like a great show.
Real good show. Tim Wicker opened up the night.
Okay.
So it's a solid build.
That's fun, man.
Yeah, it was fun. And then last night was Winston's, and it was pretty good again. You know, it was much better than I expected. There's probably like 40 people there or so.
Okay.
So we've
been trying to
decent.
Get more tickets out there and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that,
so that was good. And then Dave Wright did really well. And then Chris Curtis did really well. And then Hugo had a tough time.
Oh man.
Yeah. He opened up with his Chinese and Mexican and they did not like it. It was just.
And they never wanted to have sex again?
They didn't want to laugh again.
Poor guy.
So yeah, he had a tough time.
I've been seeing him out again. So he's at least coming out and performing. So
yeah. No, it was good to see him.
Sometimes you got to force yourself. I don't know if comedy is like this for everyone, but I get like bummed out about it and don't want to do it. And then I have to just force myself to go out to stay.
Yeah.
You know, because you get rusty and you forget your material and stuff. Yeah,
no, you have to. I mean, work for me the past month has just been very busy. So I had to back off the open mics and the ability to hit the circuit. And then I went up on stage and I'm like, oh, my God, I forgot how this joke went. Listening to the set when I recorded it, I'm like, I forgot this tagline and this tagline. And it's just because without the repetition, you kind of forget your jokes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I just think I'm in a bubble area where it's like I want to get booked for longer gigs.
Yeah.
Like these 8-minute sets don't really excite me anymore. So it's like I don't know how to take that next jump.
Yeah.
What
you
I
know,
need to do.
I had a fun 8-minute one at the store the other night. And it was a different because I've been doing mostly long sets and I hadn't done a lot of shorter things. And it was like 8 minutes, it really felt condensed, you know,
right.
it was really fun. Less pressure too. It was like, oh, I don't have to do a half an hour.
Yeah.
So both sides are fun, but, I've had a few good ones. I had a New Year's Eve show that was really fun at the Madhouse.
Okay.
Sultan and Billy and I, we were each doing about a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That was really, really fun. And then, they let me headline the Palace finally for the first weekend.
Oh, you did the weekend.
First weekend of the year. So I did 4 shows, at the Palace.
That went pretty well.
Yeah. I was doing 40 minutes on each show. And, it went really well. It was really
set
fun.
Set list or no set list?
So I always have a set list. I always write a set list. If I look at it, I look at it. If I don't, I don't.
But, okay.
I mean, by the end, I know what I'm doing.
Right.
But generally it's, you know, I did 2 different sets at the Madhouse last night. I had 25 minute feature spots. And so the first set, I tried some new stuff and did a different thing. And on the second set, because I hadn't got to it, I did all the closers.
Mm.
So the second set went really well.
Yeah.
You know, cause it was just just 5 closers at the end there. So it's
And you did 25?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said it was kind of weird. They had the host do 5 and then you immediately did 25.
It was odd because it was just really, you're really opening the show. So it's like the host does 5, barely warms them up at all, brings you up. They're still ordering drinks and food and stuff.
Right.
So for the first 10, 15 minutes, they were checked out completely and I got them in the last 15.
Yeah.
But, I would say, man, appreciate the openers and guest spot people even more because holy shit, the momentum they generate is important for the show. When you go up to feature and no one has warmed them up, it doesn't feel like featuring. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know?
And the headliner was Dwayne Perkins.
Dwayne Perkins. And he did an hour. He's preparing for something.
Okay.
So he's really polished and really good. I do think an hour is a long time for one comic, you know, for any one comic to watch one comic for an hour. Feels like kind of a long time.
Yeah, but those big time guys do Bill Cosby does 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I don't think I could watch that. I think I'd be bored shitless. I'd be like, fucking stand up, move around, do something. I can't handle it.
Yeah.
You know?
But
I don't have the attention span for that shit, you know?
Yeah. That's just too much. But I know I saw some video because Bill Cosby, all he does is sit in a chair.
Right. That's what I'm
material,
saying. I could maybe watch Dave Chappelle for 2 hours. That's about it. You
right.
Know? Other than that, there's no way.
But yeah, I guess people were heckling him and calling him no means no. Why would you pay money
And go to a show and then heckle?
Just to heckle and get thrown out? Because I imagine those tickets must be at least $100.
They're pretty expensive, I think.
No, seriously, just to heckle Dr. Huxtable. Man.
Actually, Matt Zint said he went to a show when he was out here last time at Humphreys, And he said he was great. I mean, even for that long a period of time.
Yeah, so. I mean, because when you get to that big of a name, people would just want to be around you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even, because his jokes have long, long setups, you know, so, but people would just want to be around you.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that's cool.
You think they shout out his stories to him, like, tell us about chocolate cake?
I guess he does a lot of new material, though.
Does he really?
Yeah, because I remember watching Comedian, the Jerry Seinfeld movie, and there was a scene with Chris Rock in it, and he goes, yeah, I saw Bill Cosby. I did 2.5 hours. I didn't remember one bit.
Wow. So, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I was listening to Eddie If's podcast, and he was talking about he and a whole bunch of other comics actually went to go see Cosby. I think this was about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were just mesmerized by, like, his ability to deliver. And I hadn't seen Cosby's set, you know, since I was a kid, and it was just kind of innocent. So, I mean, I have nothing really to compare where he was before all the bad news came out.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's one of the greats, absolutely. But I think too many comics are doing Cosby material right now. It's like getting to be, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, especially he's like one of the greats.
Yeah.
You know, then, so to rip on him when this is what you're doing is just kind of strange.
No, it's just been a sad year for comedy, you know, just whether it be their public image or actually just passing away. A lot of the greats, you know, going back to the 80s that I remember from stand-up, I mean, you know, kind of moved on. And whether it be, like I said, in the grave or, you know, something like this happening with Cosby.
Yeah, totally. Oh, let's hope this year's better. Let's hope 2015 they're not like Jim Carrey's into bestiality, too. Anybody know that? Shit. Pet Detective, that changes everything.
Yeah, the second Pet Detective, when he was crawling out.
Out of Rhino's Asses.
Rhino's Asses, yeah.
Fantastic film.
I saw they're coming out with Hot Tub Time Machine 2.
Whoa, didn't see the first one. I'll have to go back in time and watch it.
I think it's funny that they come out with these movies that clearly, like Taken 3.
I know. I haven't seen any of the Takens, but...
I saw the first one.
I want to see
that.
Taken 3.
We got to go to break.
Got a lot of skills.
All right. You'll see WS Radio Worldwide. We're going to talk to you next.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we have back. Second segment.
Yeah, so, we can actually bring the guest in now.
Yeah, bring the guest in. So, Randy Villarver, thank you for joining us.
No, thank you guys for having me.
Buddy. Not a problem. So, did you do any shows other than the Riviera this week?
This week, actually, I did the JP show that I host once a month. It's typically the first week of every month in Terracana.
Okay.
Unless I'm out of town, then it kind of strays from here and there. But, yeah, I did that show, and New Year's, going to the New Year's, I opened up for the band The Routine at 710 Beach Club.
No shit.
Yeah. I actually did a 20-minute set, which
You're
was...
You serious? You, wow. So did they have other comics on that?
I think they brought me on about 10 o'clock.
Are you friends with that band?
I actually knew the drummer from basically elementary school, Terracana, we all grew up, and... when I was at his wedding a couple of weeks ago, the entire band was there, and you need to check out The Routine if you haven't, actually.
Yeah, they played Winston's before.
But, they were just, hey, do you guys, they all talked around, and they're like, hey, do you want to have him open up for us? I'm like, sure, I think I could do it. I've actually done comedy before music, I know how rough it is, but I mean, from bar mic to bar mic, it's not that much rougher than a bar mic, so.
No. How did it go?
It went well. Everybody up front that was paying attention was definitely locked in.
Yeah.
I had the crowd's attention for roughly about 10 minutes, and then everyone just continue to order drinks.
Yeah.
The heckling came in about 15, so you kind of had a, tap dance, get people to shut up, and at that point it was wrapping everything up and bringing the band up.
And you consider that good? That went well.
Well,
I'm just asking because I've done 710 before, not even with bands, just a comedy show that they've had, and it's like that for the comedy show too. They just talk through the whole thing.
Oh,
it was
I forgot about that show we did a while.
Remember?
Back
I did a couple of them there.
Yeah.
And it was like Winston's, but like jocks.
well, all the different mics I've done, going up to LA, there's this mic that George Perez runs up in, it's second base up in Santa Ana, Orange County. And I actually watched Joey Diaz, George Perez, and Jeff Garcia. They were crushing with a third of the room just talking. like in the very back, and everybody was laughing, but about a third of the room still
was checked
talking,
out completely.
Just checked out.
Was it just geographical, like everyone at that the farthest third of the room?
No,
talking?
It was dispersed because this room's one of the toughest rooms because it's a bikini bar, and they don't turn off all the sports, and some people just kind of stray in.
What's a bikini bar?
Where the girls are all like in bikinis and
Like everyone
dressed.
Working there or all the everyone?
The servers the
okay.
Or the bartenders. So
what's the address of that?
I forgot what street it's on. It's a Second Base Bar and Grill, but it's every Tuesday, George Perez up in Orange County.
And Second Base, and they wear no clothes?
Yeah. Well,
that's a real classic
some
joke.
Some clothes. I wouldn't say no clothes, but,
okay, right.
but it's a tough bar, Mike, and I remember the first time I went there, I just completely bombed. It was like one of those, all right, I drove up, all right, brought me on about 11, and it was just like, oh, that sucked. Now I have to drive all the way back to San Diego and get up at 6 in the morning to work. And then second time did a little better, and then the last couple times I've gone up there, just kind of got a feel for it. It's when you realize you could get a crowd like that to shut up at moments. Because even when I lost the crowd...
Two-thirds of them, anyway.
Well, even at the 7:10, as everyone started talking, as I got to the closers, all of a sudden you just heard the
They started
noise,
paying attention during the closer?
Yeah.
Okay,
and then at that point... So when it's rowdy, and that's what I like about JPs sometimes, even when it's rough, like, if you could get the person playing pool not trying to pay attention with their head, and... or just the loud crowd and everyone all of a sudden people shut up and listen to you. You realize there's something in a joke. Bring that to the club and it hits, or bring it to like the Riviera Club where you had a crowd looking to laugh, ready to laugh, having that attention, telling people to shut up when other people are talking over the joke. It does well. It crushes.
I could see that being good training for sure. I mean, we came up on Winston's and places like that where, I mean, Joey Diaz, who you mentioned, he's the one that told us before that he started in a steakhouse and he only got good when he was able to make them drop their utensils and spit their food out and laugh and listen. So I could get that. I guess for me, it's like it gets frustrating after a while doing shows where a third of the people don't give a shit, and clubs, it's like they came to see the show.
Right.
But you get spoiled by that, too, and then you go do bars and you suck balls. So.
Right. So how long have you been doing comedy now?
Actually, I've been doing comedy going into my second year, actually.
Okay.
It started, it was American Comedy Company, November 2013. My roommate at that time was tired of me pitching jokes over the coffee table or breakfast. Just, and she's like, all right, you've been talking about that damn open mic. And she dragged me down there. I sat there at the lotto draw, 2 weeks, didn't make it up. The third week, she didn't go. And I'm like, I went the last two. Hmm. At that point, Sam Wiles brought me up, told two jokes. And, the first one, which triggered me to want to actually really get up there, was I posted a joke on Facebook and I never really did that. Like, wasn't a comic. It was something I always wanted to do. Ended up a back and forth argument between two of my really good friends on the post thread to the point where all of a sudden, you know, I'm following.
Do you remember the joke of what you originally posted?
Yeah, it was when Typhoon Haiyan slammed into the Philippines. So what I posted was
good start.
Okay, so let's start with a tragedy.
So
right.
And it was
always good
right
comedy.
When it happened, because I remember I was up drunk watching CNN, and I was like, all right, Typhoon Haiyan slammed into the Philippines, like Precious getting in the bathtub, water everywhere. And then, so I had one friend go, that's messed up. That's your own people. You should take that down. And then I had another friend chime in. That was funny. Come on, take the joke. And then the back and forth argument, I'm like, okay, I have to build on this. And I've actually built that up to about a 3 to 4 minute bit with all the tags laid out. So
still,
it's just,
still a Precious reference in there?
No, I've actually updated it to Honey Boo Boo's mom, I think, actually works a little bit better. But it's just, and then I you overweight person. I mean, I've done John Goodman, and I realize it's the water displacement, and I don't know. It's that's the image I'm going for there, and it rolls into the other tags.
But how did the other joke go?
The other joke, actually, I haven't really done this, the other joke. The other joke was just a... Basically,
hurricanes are caused by obese people.
Like, so the 3 minute...
there's a cyclone of fat.
Like, they give you 3 minutes at that open mic at American Comedy Company. So the other one, I haven't even done since, but I got enough giggles, and I realized it was from the comics in the back, because that's where I realized, all the comics are in the back of the...
Right.
And it was just a stupid masturbation joke, like, about, like, being in a house and like where everything echoes, and I heard my roommate turn off her alarm, turn off her computer. And I'm like, oh my God, that means that they've heard me turn off my computer multiple times after just, well, you know.
Anyways. Doing adult stuff alone.
Thin walls. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. you know,
all right.
When you're single, you know, or, you know, anyways,
you got to handle it.
Yeah. You got to handle it. Cause I mean, laying there at like 2 a.m, I could hear them cough. And if they could hear that, they could, I don't know, kind of deaf. I listen to headphones really loud. So I think I might be.
So you'd always been a fan of condom comedy?
Condom being.
Actually, elementary school, going back to, I want to say kindergarten, when my parents were playing Mahjong and all the kids were sitting there watching television. I remember this one time we were at my aunt and uncle's. It was probably about midnight. They were watching Eddie Murphy's Delirious.
Mm. Okay.
I'm 5 at this time. And so
By the way, Jeff, you know what Mahjong is?
No idea. I was going to ask.
Asian poker. Watch Joy Luck Club. That
Asian poker. It's like...
with tiles. It's actually pretty cool.
I think they do play it at the card room I played.
Yeah. It's kind of like...
A lot of yelling.
Right.
Well, no, they're Asians. It's a lot of yelling.
It's usually played by Asians or old Jewish ladies that play Mahjong.
I used to take the tiles with my G.I. Joes and make like castle structures with them. And then just my parents would be all pissed. And they're like, what happened to this tile? I'm like, I have no idea.
Are your parents supportive of your comedy?
At first they weren't because it was pulling me away from my job at the time. I was working as a technician. And when I found comedy, it just kind of... It reminded me I was a writer. It's what I went to school for.
What kind of technician?
I was installing low voltage cabling.
Okay. And did your parents want you to continue with that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lucrative career. It's a great career. I was, you know, excelling with the company, but I just hit this point when I started doing comedy, and it just hand in hand. The company was national, so they'd send me everywhere. I'd be everywhere from like freaking Iowa to West Virginia, Pennsylvania.
Did you quit? Are you not laying cable anymore?
No, I'm not. No. Well,
are you full-time comedy?
Not full-time comedy. I actually, long story short, I walked away from that job, lined everything up to chase comedy. So for about 3 months was lining everything up to go to Boston.
Okay.
A week and a half before that, I was offered a job to market snowboards. So tied in with my work experience and,
is it this company,
digital
the hat you're wearing with
Flow Snowboards. It's
we'll edit that out.
Free plugs. Go ahead.
No free plugs. The sweatshirt also.
Well, yeah. Okay. So this snowboarding company that happens to be in Southern California.
Already sponsored comedian here, Randy Villarba.
You know,
he's got merch.
I was offered.
Do you ever sell your own clothing as merch right off your back? Just say, hey, does anyone want to buy this Flow? What is it called?
So you're, I actually haven't gotten to worry about or even think about the business part of comedy. I'm still just trying to concentrate on the jokes and like having to think about, like you guys were talking about
mass tragedy and masturbation's a good start. So.
Well, I mean, that was first open mic. And since then I ditched the masturbation joke. And like I said, I built up the mass tragedy of my own people into actually a pretty, pretty good closer, even dated. And you could just change the name of the typhoon or location. I think I even switched it to like Hawaii when they had that flood. And
that's a great thing. There's always a new tragedy. Yeah. You know?
I've done a Paul Walker joke constantly that involves being stuck behind a Porsche Carrera GT, and like for crying out loud, I'm waiting for another celebrity to die so I could just switch the car.
Grim.
switch the celebrity, but then stack the jokes one after the other.
Why won't people die for our comedy, huh?
Comedy and tragedy.
That's the real
what I learned
who
in writing.
Who are your favorite comedians?
I have to go to the
we'll
next.
Find out
go to the next.
Right
we'll
after
next
this.
We are listening to WFRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet. I'll be back in 3 minutes.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Third segment of Comics Booyah. Talk Comedy. Randy's still here.
So, Bilarba.
Randy, okay. Did you get some comics you liked?
Yeah. I actually had this discussion quite a bit, and usually you go top three, and I realized you have to expand it, and then I was like, all right, what's your Rushmore 4? And I'm a soccer fan, so I actually have a starting 11, so I'm going to run through them pretty quick. All right, so in no particular order, I'd have to say Jim Jeffries, David Tell, Sam Kinison, Joey Diaz, Patrice O'Neill, George Carlin, Doug Stanhope, Bill Burr, Greg Giraldo, and Bill Hicks.
Okay.
Would be my starting 11.
Great lineup. A lot of dark tragedy in that lineup, right there.
And it's for me, it's just the comedy that I gravitate to. Yeah. And I remember
you're a serious-minded fellow, aren't you, Barba?
Well, it's I forgot. It was either Patrice O'Neill who said it when he was being interviewed, or it might have been Bill Burr talking about it, Patrice saying that comedy was like 50-50, the room laughing, and the other half like too horrified to react or just quiet. And to me, like, just that pull and ebb and flow of comedy, I kind of like, because it's like life is dark, and if you could kind of laugh at that and move on, and dark comedy, and I don't know, I just like,
I don't know, like when I had Renee on, he said like almost every joke comes out of something sad. Like, and if you think about it, I mean, there is some sad aspect to almost every joke that you make. Mm. So it's just teetering that line. You don't want to go too dark.
I wouldn't say those comics are sad comics. I mean,
I wouldn't say they're sad, but they're just kind of like Jim Jeffries.
Yeah.
A lot of his stories are pretty dark.
No, very dark. Extremely dark. Attention grabbing.
Yeah, and you had
sure.
Bill Hicks and Stanhope. And so, I mean, you know, that's definitely a specific vibe to comedy. It's not goofy. Wacky stuff. It's like, right.
This is
serious.
But it's my own personal starting 11.
No, I'm
a fan of all different kinds of comedy. And, I mentioned earlier Eddie Murphy, age 5, Delirious. And then as you continue on from there, I remember my first tape was Sam Kinison. Mm-hmm. And that was what, 86 or 87? I was like 7 years old at this point. So this would have been first, second grade. I walked into freaking the warehouse, which I could plug that. That's not around anymore. But I walked into there as a little kid with just a whole bunch of change and bought that tape. And I actually had the Sam Kinison tape.
Uh-huh.
My sister reminded me of this at Thanksgiving. Marie was like, I remember babysitting you, and you and Dennis were reciting Sam Kinison in the pool. I'm like, how the hell do these second graders know this kind of language?
Do you know who Sam Kinison's inspiration for his act was? You happen to know?
Jesus?
No, it's Gene Wilder. Do you
know
who
Wilder.
That actor is?
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, of course.
I always
Wilder.
Found that interesting because I had read that somewhere that Gene Wilder was the basis for how he did his act, which was he would start very calm and low energy and gentle and quiet and build up to this screaming, frothing, raving lunatic. That's just what Gene Wilder used to do in his movies.
Right? Yeah. And it's the pacing and the timing. And I also heard that he learned that being a preacher.
Yeah.
So it's just like through public speaking or just even being comfortable on stage. I mean, that, but the way that you present the timing of a joke, like if you speak over that moment that needs to be silent, and if you don't recognize that, then it's just like, you killed the momentum you were building as you.
How do you go about writing now?
He looks at obituaries.
Obituaries and sad things. I wait for
sleepovers in graveyard.
Well, for me, I just have like constant scribbles on bar napkins and coasters that are ideas. I'm a firm believer that actually writing it down connects me more than actually typing it in my phone, because I have all these notes in my phone I don't really reference. But sitting there at my writing desk at home, having this stack of actually something I wrote and. Then going into my notebook and transferring that into why did I write this phrase that doesn't make any sense?
Yeah.
And then extrapolating it from there.
Yeah, I like that.
Because it's, for me, it's, Stephen Pressfield's book, The War of Art. It's just tapping into the muse, the inspiration that we all tap into. These ideas kind of hit our head and then they just kind of go off. And if we don't lock into it, someone else is going to tell the joke. And how many times you're like, I want to write this joke. Then you go to the open mics and you're like, someone's already telling a joke like that. I'm like, darn.
Yeah.
And you don't want to, like, you know, step over someone's material. But
right.
I don't know. So I'm a, it's a great book, and that book helped me refine writing, I would say.
Your origin, you grew up in Tierra Santa, is that right?
Yeah, here in San Diego. East County, San Diego.
East County, okay.
Is that considered East County?
Anything east of the five is East County.
Okay. And Villarbo, what kind of name is that? Villarbo?
It's Filipino.
Filipino. Do you speak Tagalog?
No, Tagalog.
How do you say that word?
It's Tagalog.
Okay.
And I just speak all the curse words that Dad used to yell at me.
Oh, really?
No, my parents...
Can you curse at us one time in Tagalog?
Yeah. Well, the simple one's putanganamo.
Wow. Is that bitch? Sounds like
son of a, son of a bitch.
Okay. Can you say it one more time?
Putanganamo.
Oh,
and it's just all the curse words.
Musical. You don't like that language?
No.
It's supposed to be gross. That was a curse word.
But my parents.
Putanganamo.
I hear them at the gym and the sauna. And it's like, dang, die, die. And it's just like,
wait, that's
Laotian.
I don't know how to speak
Laotian.
It
just hurts my ears.
My family, they all grew up in the Philippines. They immigrated in the 70s. I was actually born here.
Uh-huh.
So when I grew up, they just wanted to speak English. They wanted to lose the accent.
Oh, and so you didn't learn it?
No. I grew up in the suburbs in the 80s. I mean, I was one of three Asians at my elementary school.
I grew up in Del Mar.
I learned to surf downhill on like frickin' on skateboards on all the hills in Terra Santa.
Yeah, you look like a big surfer. Skate. Do you surf and skate now?
I used to surf until my surfboard got stolen in college, and then that's when I went into snowboarding.
Okay.
I've been skiing since I was three, started snowboarding at 15.
Steals your snowboard?
That's like stealing an arm. I'm ready to kill someone if someone steals my snowboard.
So you would buy another one?
No,
quit surfing though.
No, I actually have quite a few snowboards. I wouldn't say I quit surfing. It just made it difficult in college.
One theft and that was it for you.
Well, one theft and then at the time in college, I was working, college, girlfriend, trying to maintain a social life.
Uh-huh.
If someone stole one of your jokes, would you quit comedy?
Yeah, would you stop doing jokes?
That happens all the time and I don't think I'm going to stop telling jokes.
People steal your jokes all the time?
No. Okay. Just in general. You always hear about joke theft situations.
Like Raul Zambrano's talking about horrible hurricanes. And
Carlos Mencilla and like half his jokes were taken from people.
He's
at
not
the
on your top
store.
11 there.
He actually, I'd say if you were talking to Randy in 1995, I'd say yeah, because I actually memorized his old stand up bits.
Like, really?
Yeah, his bits.
How does it go? Dirt to dirt?
No. His bits about the riots going like, yeah, we went in to the stores, loaded up with, this is someone else's joke, not Mencia's, so I'll do it. It's just like loaded up with stuff. And then we went outside and did interviews with evidence in our hands. Just going, and then we're stuck in jail going, how did they find out where we live? And it's like, that bitch, Connie Chung, ratted on us, Holmes.
And that was Mencia's joke that he took from someone else, or?
A lot of people. It's that whole, like, Joe Rogan.
So you were memorizing stuff that he had to memorize from someone else?
Well, I guess so, in 95, but at that time it was just, kid memorizing comedy.
Totally.
I mean, for me, a longtime fan of comedy, but never really having the freaking cojones to get up there until my roommate dragged me up there.
But yet you're brave enough, you do surfing and skating and snowboarding. I mean, that takes a lot of, chutzpah, so you got out there
it's finding a zen moment and going on stage, very similar to being a musician, and I've been doing that since high school. So going on stage and to hit that zen moment that you find surfing or snowboarding.
Let me ask you this. When you do music, is it important to pause like the way it is in comedy? Because in comedy, it's not always what you say, it's how you say it and what you don't say. And I've found that that's more important really than the actual words, is the pacing of it, the timing of it, and pausing. Do you pause at all during music?
During music, I do like songs with dramatic pauses, but it does need to maintain that same tempo. Because, if you pause and come back in.
My anaconda don't want none unless you've got.
If you're at that point, you have the meter of that break.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like my anaconda and then keep the tempo.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go back in, you're re-entering at that
my
tempo. Because if you're dancing with a girl and you're in that grinding moment and then you go off tempo, then both you guys get thrown off. And especially on that song,
I don't want to throw off my grind.
Did you sing or did you play an instrument?
Actually started in a punk band playing guitar, which expanded to a ska band, and I played saxophone in elementary school.
You know what ska music is? Ska music is...
I don't think I like it.
It's basically they
the origin
sing
of reggae.
In Tagalog. You'd love
no,
it.
No, no, and, no. It's actually the origin of reggae. There's ska music before reggae, then when hot summer slowed down.
It's like faster reggae, kind of.
Okay,
it's
maybe I like did it.
For, yeah.
Yeah, but we were all teenagers in this band Broken Pretzel. Youngest member was 14, oldest person was 19, in a Club Wagon van touring. Fun. You know, and you know, 70s tour.
Was that legal to be a 14-year-old?
The band
probably not.
This was the '90s. Let's see. This was 94 to 99.
Way
roughly.
Back then there was no laws.
So you were 14. You were the youngest.
No, actually, Faye, our alto saxophonist, was the youngest.
It was a chick? You brought a 14-year-old chick in the van? That's bold.
Talk to the lead singer.
Parenting.
No, if you think about it, like, different day and age. I mean, gas then was, dating held. Well, whatever. We're old.
It's the 90s. Less, we're trying to, less, we're yeah, not talking yeah. about the
gas,
40s.
Gas was less than a dollar. We
back
all had
the 90s.
We actually had a manager. We were able to go from San Diego to Indianapolis. We linked up with a few bands like Real Big Fish, MXPX, did some actual touring, got to sit in some.
How did they
buses.
Feel about you bringing a 14-year-old around?
We were just playing music. And it's
none of you were
have
sleeping.
You been to a ska show? Like, ska shows are like 15, 16-year-olds. So on stage,
yes,
where the kids buying
school.
The tickets.
Nobody slept with Faye?
I hope not. Oh my gosh. This is. We'll save that for the last segment.
We'll
I don't want to know about
coming
that.
Back. We are putting Randy Villarba on the spot today.
Harba.
So we'll be back with WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
We're sorry, Faye.
I'm sorry.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Last segment. So, Randy, why did the band break up?
Tragic story. 98, our manager, a guy we actually went to school with, got killed in a car accident 2/3 of the way through our summer tour. Wow. And at that point, the band just decided to take a 6-month hiatus. We went back on tour with a different lineup, but... of course, different energy on the road. And
yeah, it's awful.
The third wave of ska kind of like died out, and
Right. Everyone's
listening to emo and didn't want to listen to happy music anymore. And everyone at that point was going into college and different careers. So.
Right. So more going in the comedy direction. You travel a lot, it seems.
Yes,
like, to go
yes.
to shows all over.
Yeah.
Driving
yeah.
doesn't matter to you, it doesn't seem like.
Back then with the ska band, I mean, we were driving all over the place between. And like I said, here
but you were making money out of me.
It was just like gas money to get to the next place. Merch at that point was what was actually paying our ability to make money, eat, feed, pay for the hotels. But it's a 7-piece band. We had family and friends in pretty much every major city we'd get booked in. So it'd be like every week we'd maybe get a hotel once and then floor crashing. Sometimes Billy, our manager, would go like, all right, guys, get out there. Try to find a floor to crash, and then like we'd actually like negotiate like crashing with like college students and stuff.
Well, that's cool. So with comedy though, you've kind of gotten seems like you've got connected with Rick Martinez.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Some comics are against that kind of whole bringer mentality, but you're okay with it. Do you find
I got connected to Rick Martinez through Oliver Bascos, the local comic, and at that point I was kind of oblivious to the bringer aspect.
Okay.
It was the first time someone approached.
How can Oliver be a bringer when he's not even on Facebook or anything? Is they use him as a bringer, Oliver?
He just kind of goes to the shows.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like they knew each other, and then Oliver just introduced me to him.
Cool.
Then I started doing the shows with Rick, and to me it was the first time anyone like club wise, you're like, hey, do you want to do the show at the Comedy Store? And I've always looked up to the Comedy Store. I'm like, oh my god, my sister always used to talk about the Comedy Store when I was a little kid, just hearing about it.
Rick make you bring people? Does he like? The bringer
aspect of the show, you do need to bring certain people. But
how many people do you have to bring?
On a typical bringer show, it's like minimum of 10. But I mean, it's a weird scenario where he's actually invited me up to L.A. and I'm like, I can't bring people because I'm getting word of this show. like short. And I've gone up there and been able to do spots up there without.
So he doesn't require you to be a bringer.
Yeah. He's been kind to me. I think he likes my comedy, and I'm in a weird gray area when it comes into the approach of the bringer show. I mean, Shane Michael online has that, Facebook thread, like No Bringers comedy group. Mm-hmm. And then like, so I've, always reading the back and forth on that. But I mean, Rick has put me up when I don't have people, and he knows that I don't have people, and I've kind of let him know I don't have people. And I was talking with, I think it was Damian Pruitt and Tim Wicker outside the store on this about other bringer promoters where like, you've been promoting the show, but you didn't bring anyone, so you're not on. And then like Rick's never done that to me, to my knowledge.
Because you were on the show this Tuesday, right?
No, I was not.
Oh, you weren't on that.
No, it's with snowboarding and winter and everything, and my actual like 9-to-5 job. I kind of took a back seat the past couple of weeks because it's like I got to concentrate on what keeps a roof over my head at the moment.
And does he pay you?
Yeah, he has, like when I actually bring a decent amount of people, but like if I like, you know, like don't bring anybody, like I said, then, I get the time, and some of the clubs that, I've had the opportunity to tell jokes at, I mean, pretty good crowds at Inside Jokes, Man's Chinese Theater, the Comedy Store. I know the Belly Room's a bringer room, but the opportunity for me to tell jokes in front of some friends up in LA who would be chiming up going, when are you going to come up to LA? And, trying to drag him out to a bar mic in Orange County where like, or wherever when I go up that way is just kind of difficult. But if you go to a club, I don't know, but no, I mean, he's been kind to me, but I totally understand why some comics are against the bringer aspect.
Right. Do you stay away from the online beefs?
The online beefs, it's hard. I realize that going on online is like drunk Facebooking with a girl. If you want to post and talk comedy, it's like you said, online beef or online,
like trolling and fighting with people online, things like that.
It's just smack talking, and like, I mean, how can something be good?
My whole life, beef has been a wonderful thing.
Beef. No. I try not to like, talk crap online because it's just. We're all in the gauntlet of telling comedy.
We're all in the same gang. Do you remember that? That was from, what, the 80s?
Like one thing that I remember listening to Rogan's podcast, he'd always say that hanging out with comics is why he's a comedian. So before I was a comic, I kind of had this romanticized view that everybody was just like, chill, blah, blah, blah. And then I got in and I realized it's kind of clicky and snipey. Right. And then you go online, that's even more clicky and snipey because just, go to any thread and then read the comments on the newspaper and people are clicky and snipey. So it's just like, comics.
Well, we're coming up on the end.
Oh. Yeah.
What is the worst show you've ever had?
Ooh, okay.
Worst. Do you have a top 11 list?
No. Okay, let's see. Worst show I ever had, I definitely would have to say, I did the Till 2 Kumite show. And had a decent set. At this point, I was maybe 4 months in, so I thought things were polished and tried a new joke that actually did all right. I actually got laughs out of a whole bunch of comics waiting for their mic. And then I got burned by Dan Harumi, and then I got burned by Ula. And
really?
At this point, I didn't understand the comic roast situation, you know?
This was not a roast, though, right? Is that what Kumite is? It's a roast?
Well, it's a no-holds-barred comics, you know, joke.
So they were insulting you? What did Dan Harumi say about you?
Because like I tried my Japanese joke for the first time, and then, so when I got off stage, I'm like, "Hey man, sorry," and then he goes on stage, and it was funny, but I was probably whiskey drunk at this point. He sees all. Randy apologized for the Japanese joke, but I didn't see it. I was staring at a wall, and I'm like, "Oh, that was kind of funny." And then
Ula's is better.
Ula went on stage and he's all, did he do that Paul Walker joke? And I'm like, I didn't do that one because at that point it's me working out the material, but I tried something new. And then all the comics are all heckling because they all wanted to be on the American Comedy Company mic. So they're all laughing and blah, 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 blah. And then Robert Timothy, as he introduced the top three winners, he's like, take that, Randy Villarba. And at this point, I'm like, I need to get out of here before I stab someone.
How far into comedy were you when this happened?
Fucking like 4 months, I think. Okay. So like,
So it wasn't really even your set. It was just the
it was the 5 minutes of the open mic that is the Kumite, and then just me. I hated my electrician job at that point.
After that,
took a while, but I mean, I love all those comics, and I look at it as just kind of like, you know, receiving your licks and you know, I talked to a couple of my other comic friends, and they're like, yeah, just fucking keep writing. Right. Fucking
what about your best show?
What's the best show you've ever had?
Best show I ever had. Okay.
You got 50 seconds.
Yeah. 50 seconds. I'd have to say, the John Lovitz Comedy Club before it shut down, which was, Rick Martinez and Jonathan Bird, Bringer show. Cause I did bring 10 people, but to actually be able to tell jokes with that entire floor and the people above you,
uh-huh,
and the city walk. I mean, that show sold out. I remember I had friends that were there during the Halloween haunts and couldn't get in. So it was
is this a different show you're talking about?
The John Lovitz Comedy Club was right there at the Universal City Walk.
Okay.
But it's like sold out show, that many people to the point halfway through my set, like 10 minute set, I was like looking up, oh yeah, there's balcony people too.
Cool.
And then like the laughs received there. And
how many people were at that club, would you say, in the audience?
Numbers wise, I have no idea.
Hundreds, thousands?
Hundreds, I'd say.
Dozens?
Because it was the bottom floor and the second floor.
Wow, that's cool.
Right. Well, where can people find you?
You can find me website at randywrites, WRITES.com, Instagram at Randy Villarva, or Twitter at Randy Wrights.
Tweet a lot?
I try to tweet a lot. More active on Facebook and Instagram.
All right. Well, we got a Twitter page, comics.comedy now.
Yeah, buddy.
All right. WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader. Talk to you back in
1 minute.